This is a Main Hustle Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Jackie O and you're listening to Militantly Mixed.
Yo, this is Rashani from the Single Simulcast. And when I'm not making you laugh or making up parody songs, I'm kicking back, listening to Militantly Mixed.
Main Hustle Media podcasts are recorded on the ancestral lands of the Chumash, Tongva, Hohokam, and Yucateco Maya people. And we wish to pay our respects to the people of those nations, both past and present.
Konnichi, what's up, cousins? Welcome to Militantly Mixed, the podcast about race and identity from the mixed race perspective. I am your Sir Auntie, Charmaine Fury, a.k.a. The Blazing Blurred, and this is episode 209. Y'all, we are a month away from the fifth anniversary of Militantly Mixed, and I cannot begin to tell you how insane it is for me, Charmaine, to say something I created, something I was passionate about, I've managed to keep doing for 5 years. I've talked about it before. I have, for the bulk of my life, suffered from a disease that is very common in my family, which is I'm super passionate. I'm heavily motivated. I got a lot of ideas. An external factor derailed me, and I let it derail me, and I didn't find another solution to get around it. That has happened to me in my independent filmmaker career. I have, in particular, one really irritating unfinished film project because of a situation with an actor, and I didn't find another solution. I thought about other solutions. I didn't make it happen. I allowed what happened to derail me. Imposter syndrome. Listening to external people who would tell me I couldn't or shouldn't try to do something. Depression. Depression has left me in a dark room on the couch or on a bed for many, many months at a time. And I have allowed that also, that just by nature of not doing anything during those bouts, to either end or derail something that was important to me that I was passionate about. And thankfully, Militantly Mixed, everything's clicked into place in a way with Militantly Mixed that didn't click into place in the past for me. And I got to a place where I was going to make Militantly Mixed happen come hell or high water. Even at times when I was so financially fucked that I thought I couldn't keep the show going, I managed to push through. When depression was getting in my way and I was just letting episodes go undone, I instituted the mental health hiatuses, which have given me room to take those times that are creeping up on me to deal with, to process, to contemplate, to be in quietness so that I can come back and maintain being the podcaster that I want to be. And it has helped tremendously in managing my depression because I've given myself room for that. I no longer have to fear that I'm going to derail the show because I already know my audience is informed about why I do the mental health hiatuses and they're anticipating it now and they give me space and grace to take that time. And when I come back, they're still there listening to the show. These are things that I've been able to institute with Militantly Mixed that I've never been able to do with any of my, you know, quote unquote failed projects of the past. Things that were at the time extremely important to me, but just could not muster back up to keep things going. So to be able to sit here today and be as happy as I am, I'm super happy today. To be able to be as happy as I am today and know that I'm a month away from celebrating the fifth anniversary of Militantly Mixed. Oh, God damn, I got so emotional just now. I cannot begin to really, really, truly express how I feel right now. This thing that I made for myself has had impact to a lot of other people. And I know that because a lot of other people have told me. They've emailed me. They've sent me messages. They've told me stories. They've shared their story on the show. I've gotten gifts, I've gotten, you know, letters, postcards, I've I've gotten enough evidence from the audience to know that this thing that I created for myself was not just helpful to myself, but also helpful to others. Mostly in the Western world, the United States, Canada, the UK, for the most part, is the bulk of my audience. But I do have audience from around the world, and I do get the occasional email from other countries expressing that while they understand that most of the people I get to talk to are Westerners, they experience something similar. And so I know that this show has the potential to have a far more global impact on the mixed community mesh us together, connect us together a little bit more. And I'm so looking forward to what the next 5 years of Militantly Mixed will look like as the word spreads that it exists and as I get a chance to interact with more mixed people from around the world. So I didn't expect to do that. I didn't expect to cry. I didn't expect to go on a whole tangent about Militantly Mixed, but it just occurred to me today that we are almost a month out from the 5th anniversary. And, you know, I tend to like to count down things. It's sort of a fixation of mine. So to be, you know, a month away, I'm just imagining how crazy it will be for me emotionally and mentally to watch the calendar click over and it's July 5th, 2023, officially the 5th day or the 5th anniversary of the show. And one more way to sort of honor the 5th anniversary of the podcast is the release of the 2023 first annual Be Your Mixed Ass Self anthology, which this year we put out back in January for submissions of nonfiction essays and poems that sort of embodied Be Your Mixed Ass Self to you, or what mixedness means to you, how you choose as a mixed person to engage in mixedness. We put out a call for that back in January. We got a lot of submissions and closed the book back in April 15th. So Teresa and I, Auntie Teresa and I, are in the process of reading and reviewing those submissions. And we should hopefully be wrapping that up in the not too distant future, because we are planning on going into print sometime this summer. But to help us go into print, we do need to raise a little bit of funds to help with the publishing costs, because we've decided to go the self-publishing route. It's very important to me, especially as an independent podcaster, that the spirit of independent creators are still present, even how we release our first book. So we are going down the self-publishing route. And to do that, that means we have to do some setup fees, publication fees, and things like that. So I am reaching out to the community to help support that. And also shout out to Auntie Teresa for recently writing a piece about the anthology and the fundraiser in the Mix Auntie Confidential blog, which is at mixedauntieconfidential.substack.com, because we actually did get a lot of traffic over the last couple weeks. We are currently at about 592 on the fundraiser, so we're about a third of the way into the funds that we need to raise to finalize publication. So if you would like to help get Be Your Mixed Ass Self, the anthology, the first volume, published and celebrate the 5th anniversary of Militantly Mixed, you can head on over to militantlymixed.com and click on the Be Your Mixed Ass Self anthology tab, or just go directly to militantlymixed.com/bymassanthology. B as in B, Y as in your, M as in mixed, A as in ass, S as in self, anthology. There is a little PayPal donate button right there, right for you. And just to answer some questions that we've received from the audience about the PayPal donation tab, you do not need to have a PayPal account to be able to donate through our PayPal button. The button itself actually allows you to either log in to your existing PayPal account and pay that way, or just pay direct with your debit or credit card. They are the credit card processor that I currently use. So if you do not have a PayPal account, but you do want to donate, still go ahead and click on that PayPal donate button on the page, because that will take care of everything for you. And again, thank you to everybody who has donated so far. Thank you to everybody who's participated in the Be Your Mixed Ass Self anthology in some way, shape, or form. a lot of the notes that I've been getting, even like notes that are coming alongside the donations, is that they're just so excited about the idea of a lot of different mixed voices in one space, which Militantly Mixed does as a overall project, I guess, across all of the podcast episodes, a whole bunch of mixed people talking about mixedness in one space by episode, where the anthology is a whole bunch of mixed people talking about mixedness in a book. So I'm really excited to get this out to y'all. I just cannot wait for the moment that I get to hold it, to hold it in my hand. So if you would like to help us get there this summer so we can put it into publish, please go ahead and head on over to militantlymixed.com and click on that Be Your Mixed Ass Self anthology tab. And with that in mind, we're going to get into today's episode. My guest today is Echo. They describe their identity as mixed Chinese and Jewish, American born. But in their particular case, their Chinese heritage comes with a little bit of Brazilian culture, in that her Chinese family immigrated to Brazil, and then her mother is a dual citizen between Brazil and the U.S. And so while their ethnic heritage is Chinese and Jewish, their Chinese heritage includes Brazilianness in the way that her Jewish heritage includes Americanness. Echo is dope. We actually did not know each other before this, which I don't know, besides our content of our conversation, you could really tell, because we giggled our little asses off the entire time. We had so much fun in our conversation. He like has been involved in participating in Militantly Mixed in different forms for a while, through Instagram, through the social media posts, through the Be Your Mixed Ass Self anthology. I've been connecting with Echo for a while, but this was the first time that we actually got to sit down and have a chat, and it was instant fun. I usually do about a 10 to 15 minute icebreaker before I hit record with everybody, and that's just because you may not be as practiced as being recorded as I am after 5 years of doing the show. So I give you a little bit of a moment to settle in, get to know me a little bit, ask questions. I tell you about the process, and then, you know, we kind of kiki for a minute, and then we go into the recording. Partly because I don't want to miss out on some good nuggets of conversation that we might have during the icebreaker. That being said, totally failed in this respect, because we just kept giggling our little asses off, and next thing I know, 45 minutes went by. Finally, I was like, we gotta hit record. So we hit record, and we got into our conversation, and the giggles continued. And then when we pressed stop at the end of our recorded episode period, we kept it going for another 45 minutes. So Echo, dope, love you, a lot of fun. And I really hope that y'all enjoy this conversation with Echo as well, because they just have like all the good vibes, all the positive vibes. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming our latest cousin to the Militantly Mixed family, Echo. Today, I am joined by Echo.
Hi.
Echo, why don't you introduce yourself and let's get into it.
I am Echo. Any and all pronouns are fine. I'm a mixed Asian, Chinese and Jewish person, currently calling from Lenape land, Queens. I identify as like a pan-gender, aero-ace, queer land worker and poet. And I just see myself as a plant and fungi enthusiast and want to nurture and care for Mother Earth and build community.
I love it. Yeah. And you actually do, like, that's your job. You do that.
Yeah, pretty much.
You take care of the earth for the living.
I try.
I said for the living, but I guess that's correct, too. For a living. And also for
the living. The living. So we gotta make things be alive. just return the life to the earth.
Be alive. Keep
the
earth alive. So, okay, you do identify yourself as a mixed Chinese and Jewish, but your Chinese heritage has got a little extra spice to does it not?
You did the thing and I thought about the salt shake meme.
Salt bay.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm Chinese on my mom's side, but my mom actually grew up in Brazil. So she was born in Taiwan, but my grandparents are from like southern China, so like Guangdong and Jiangxi. So they immigrated to São Paulo when my mom was like two, and then she grew up there, finished out university there, and then like moved to the States. I don't even remember when, like decades ago. Mm-hmm. But so she fully grew up immersed in Brazilian culture and is fluent in Portuguese. And I don't consider myself to be fluent in Portuguese per se. I'm more like generally conversational, but I can mm-hmm. make the sounds.
You can make it. You're at home.
Me.
I say that too about Japanese. I am not fluent, but I can make the sounds.
Yes. Yeah. So like I grew up speaking Portuguese at home with my mom, but I didn't speak Mandarin at all. I didn't speak Cantonese at all. I kind of grew up like going to Chinese school as a kid, and then more so in late elementary school, middle school era, I was going to Chinese class, but it was really, really hard for me because I was in a reading and writing class for the longest time when I really needed to be in a speaking class. Mm. I could pronounce everything and I understood the tones and etc. And mm-hmm. I can sound fluent if I try, but I don't know grammar. I don't know words. Mm-hmm. I can't remember shit. And I just specifically remember in middle school, the other kids would make fun of me. And I actually thought it was because I was mixed and not mm-hmm. fully Asian. But as an adult, I've kind of thought about it more. And it's like, no, they were disappointed that I couldn't speak because I didn't speak it at home. So that was something like a weird cognitive dissonance that I noticed as an adult.
Did you speak like a mix between English and Portuguese at home then? Enough that you feel more fluent, I guess, in Portuguese than
Yeah, so Portuguese with my mom, and then English literally everywhere else, plus with my dad, and then kind of losing a little bit of my Portuguese over the years as it so happens. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a common thing.
I would say like if I had what I have now available to me when I was a teen and like in my early 20s, I think I would be far more fluent in Japanese because now I go on Preply or Italki and I have these like half an hour to an hour long sessions with a Japanese tutor. And a lot of it is mostly recalling what I already know to get to the point mm-hmm. where I can start learning other things. And she does like put together lessons for me and stuff like that too, so that I can learn. We do a lot of repetitive like sentence structure. Like, so we're just making the same structure of a sentence, like with a bunch of different things. And if I had had that access, you know, I pay like, I don't know what it is. I think it's like $16 an hour. If I had that when I was a teenager, oh gosh, I'd be like just someone else to talk
just
to.
Just be fluent. Yep.
Yeah. Because like my grandmother didn't want to speak Japanese in the home. Like when she came over in the 50s, the military, U.S. military literally told her not to speak Japanese at home. Don't teach your kids. You're going to confuse their brains. So by the time I come around, it's like, you've already been a citizen now for, you know, 20 something years. Like you're not getting sent back. Like just teach me. But I didn't have a way of expressing that too much. And so, you know, the Japanese I know is the Japanese that like, there were just some things at home that were only said in Japanese and it was more words than sentences. Right.
Right.
And so, yeah, I can make the sounds. I have an ear for it. Mm-hmm. Even though it's fast, like even when it's fast, I can pick up a little bit, but when it's, you know, just regular, like slow talk or regular talk, I understand everything. I'm picking up everything that's happening, but I can't speak it. you know?
Yep, I feel that. I can watch entire movies in Portuguese, and for the most part, I will understand mm-hmm. what's going on. Mm-hmm. There will occasionally be some words in there that are too big for my tiny brain. I don't know that word, but I know what's going on. And I can, for the most part, watch it without subtitles. I would more so need subtitles because I cannot for the life of me process audio, even in English.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have to ask people to repeat themselves like 3 times.
Okay.
I'll hear everything, but my brain
processing
is processing. What's a word?
No, I got you. I mean, that makes it actually sense, especially now because I'm actively trying to learn Spanish while living in Mexico, and there's no subtitles when you're at the bodega, you know, like, yeah. You know, you're just like, when I get the like Uber Eats to drop off food and they're like rambling off something to explain to me what happened in the store. And I'm just like, mas despacio, por favor.
Yeah.
Español es mal. Like, you know, it's just like, I got one word you said, yeah. Like, but I don't even know, like, where's the subtitle? And the one thing about Google Translate, it's not fast enough for you to be like, boop, boop, and hold it up to let them talk to you so that you can read it yeah. at the same time. Yeah. Which makes me think I might get one of those translator tools, but then I don't want to rely on that either. So,
right.
So one question I do want to ask you based off of our pre-conversation, but also mm-hmm. like what you just expressed here, your mother is culturally Brazilian. No,
for the most part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Maybe not so much. So I think culturally she is culturally mixed, if that makes
okay.
sense.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
it's
yeah.
very much a combination of like Chinese culture and Brazilian culture, mm-hmm. but then there's also the aspect of American assimilation too.
Sure, yeah.
So it's like all of those things coexisting in one person and thus also in me.
Yeah, so you, and then she has a mixed race child uh-huh. and also there's that level too.
A mixed cultural heritage, yeah.
Like when you talk about your identity and your heritage and you say I'm mixed Chinese Jewish, mm-hmm. Is there a reason you don't include Brazilian in it?
I just realized I forgot to include that part in my intro, but that's okay.
No, not like in your, not a part of your intro, but like literally like I'm a mixed Chinese and Jewish person mm-hmm. versus saying like I'm mixed Chinese Brazilian and Jewish person yeah. or something like that.
Oh, now I understand your question. I don't really feel comfortable claiming any sort of Brazilian identity or like Latine identity, uh-huh. Mostly because my mom doesn't really claim to be Latina.
Okay.
So I don't feel comfortable enough because I'm that much more removed from her claiming that as part of my mix,
sure.
my cultural mix. And my mom will introduce herself as a Chinese person.
Okay.
So yeah, like she'll, if the conversation ends up calling for it, she will explain that she has dual citizenship in Brazil and that she grew up there and she's from São Paulo and she has all these things going on. But mm-hmm. yeah, it's mostly like in discussing nationality that she'll be like, yeah, I have dual citizenship in Brazil, but I'm Chinese.
Yeah.
Her identity right now, I think for her, lies mostly in like being a Chinese person.
Right.
Even though she like, yeah.
That makes sense.
Respect.
The reason why the question pops up to me is because now that I'm living here in Mexico, and mind you, I'm only 2 months in, I wonder for myself, like, how long do I have to be here before Mexico becomes a part right. of my identity to a degree? And in doing so, do I explain myself like, because what I struggle with as an American born mm-hmm. person is that I feel the second class citizenship I have in the country I was born in. I literally can't come back into the country without being held up at customs because where were you born? Nowhere were you really born.
Right.
Ends up happening to me. And so now that I live in a country where national identity is separate from ethnic identity, mm-hmm. me saying I'm Black and Japanese, I was literally told by someone that said, interesting, not important. You know, right. and it wasn't like rude. It was literally just like, that's not how we
not
do
really
it here. You know, it's just not yeah. relevant here because here, what the person was explaining, we're all Mexican. Now, of course, they have their differences of colorism and indigenous issues and things mm-hmm. like that or whatever, blah, blah, blah. They definitely have their issues and they don't like to talk about it. But I come from a country where we talk about this stuff. And also, I'm not granted the same class of citizenship, even though I was born there. And I'm having to reconcile with the fact that where I live now, that's what they see me as. And so yes. I'm like apologetically American in that I'm like, oh no, I mean, yes, but no, you know, like, but
yeah, no, me
it's
too,
not
actually.
A part of the way they explain things. So it's an internal problem that I need to figure out how to get comfortable with. And if I'm here for 4 years, 10 years, 12 years, I assume at some point Mexican will become a part of my identity, but I would have to explain it like that in nationalistic terms of like, you know, I'm a Black Japanese British American who's been living in Mexico for the last X yeah. years or whatever. So I was just, you know, curious, like in terms of what got passed down to you, do you have Brazilian culture at home or do you just have Brazilian language at home, which is obviously part of the culture, but a different...
I would say I do actually have Brazilian culture at home a little bit.
Okay.
Mostly through food.
Of course.
It's always the food.
It's always the food. I swear this should be called like militantly mixed food because the amount of times we talk about
series in which we only talk about mixed food.
The next book is going to be a cookbook. Like,
yes.
Come on, let's do it.
I would love to get into that. Oh my God. Okay. This is a tangent, but everything bagels with tea eggs on it is my fusion food.
Okay. Okay.
Like, specific, okay. Anyway, but I will say, I did grow up a bit with Brazilian culture at home. Like we had two distinct ways of making rice. It would be like, if you're making Chinese rice, there's only rice and water. And,
right.
My mom didn't do like the first knuckle measuring thing in the rice cooker. I started doing it, but she just kind of like just.
My family is a wrist knuckle family. So we lay our hand on top of the rice and we put the water to our knuckle.
Oh, nice.
So I know this. I understand the finger knuckle thing, but my family is a flat hand with the wrist knuckle thing.
You know, it's so interesting though, because I feel like either way you do it, the height is going to be different for whoever does it, because
everybody's hands are different sizes. Like, what are we doing? But we're all convinced it's perfect the way we do
yes.
it, even though literally my
Which
grandma's rice, my aunt's rice, and my rice, our hands are different sizes.
Yeah, which is, I'm pretty sure that's why rice is so controversial among
it
Asians.
Is,
because
it
we're
is.
All like, no, my way is right because yeah. I measure it to my finger length and mm-hmm. that's correct. But we had the like plain rice, which would go with like our Chinese dishes, but then we'd make like Brazilian rice also in a rice cooker. And honestly, all that really entailed was like salt and garlic and onion minced, plus a little bit of like cooking oil, like canola oil or olive
sure.
oil, whatever we had in hand. And that would kind of let the edges like toast a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit different. And there was a Brazilian grocery store about 15 minutes away from where I grew up. And I remember my mom got this, like, I don't know how else to describe it other than this, like, Brazilian chicken bouillon salt or something
okay.
of the sort. And so there were a couple of years in which we would add, like, a tiny little pinch of that to our rice, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so we make different rice. I grew up on beans and rice.
Mm-hmm.
Beans and rice, a lot of, like, stir-fried collard greens and, like, eggs. And my mom would make this, like, Brazilian stroganoff dish.
Okay.
Growing up, and I don't know, I just remember that existed because I've been craving it for months and I don't know how to make it. And I'm like, hey, can you please send me the recipe? And then she's like, I don't remember how I made it either.
Oh no.
I can't find it. And I'm like, no.
Can you just like have a night where y'all practice together and see if you can put it together?
I think that's what we're going to end up doing.
Yeah, you got to reclaim that. You got to reclaim your Brazilian stroganoff.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I did grow up actually. Now that I'm thinking about it, I did grow up with like a lot of Brazilian culture because my mom has like three siblings. So I have some, I also have mixed cousins.
Okay.
But all of her side of the family also grew up in Brazil.
Sure,
but they're
yeah.
also all Asian.
Yeah.
But we're all like culturally Brazilian too. So
yeah.
like I remember as kids, if we would get together either in like New York City or New Jersey, because that's where like part of my family lives. And then I used to have an aunt that lived actually in this apartment building here. but she passed away a few years ago, but like we would all gather mm-hmm. like in the city and go to like a Brazilian steakhouse or something.
Right. Yeah.
But like it's always the food.
I mean, it's part of the cult. Like I can't separate that. Like for me on the outside hearing you, I wouldn't be able to separate that from like, you definitely have access to culture. You may not be born there or, you know, ethnically mixed with the same thing that the people there. But to be fair, in Brazil, there's like 175 different racial categories and stuff like that. So like, I mean, you're part of that legacy, I think, to a degree. And then when I put it in terms of like being American born and or first generation American, American does eventually have to become a part of your identity. It's just the way in which we're told it gets to be a part of our identity as brown people is different than the way white Americans or white immigrants are told American gets to be a part of their identity. And so like in the effort to move forward in my life with the same level of confidence as a mediocre white person, I would want to say, if you have claim to it, I have claim to it, you know, in terms of the American identity. I feel like there is, regardless of whether the ethnicity is present, Brazilian culture is definitely a part of the fabric that makes your family, right? Yeah. So
it really is. And I'm much more comfortable actually navigating through Brazilian spaces and like pockets of Brazilian culture in the States than I am interacting, like say with another Chinese person, even though I am Chinese. But yeah, it's always funny though, because when I start speaking Portuguese to Brazilian people, they are so confused. You're ready to like speak English to me or something.
Yeah.
I'm just like, quero um empadão de queijo, por favor. And they'll be like, wait a second.
Why? I had
to do it in my brain. And then like, there was one summer that I was living in Boston and I went to
I've lived there too. Sorry.
Oh, yay.
Personal moment. I apologize.
It was only for like 2 months for me, but I went to, I don't remember the name of the neighborhood, but there was like a pasteleria there mm-hmm. where they would make like pastels. And I ordered everything in Portuguese and I was just kind of like, all right, brain has code switched.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The guy was kind of looking at me a little bit strangely, but like he answered in Portuguese. And then at like a couple of awkward silent seconds passed while my order was being done. Then he was like, what?
Why?
What? Why? Exactly. He was just like, I was like, aren't you Asian or something? I was like, I did like the whole shebang. I was like, yeah, I'm Chinese, but like my mom grew up in Brazil, so I speak Portuguese, blah, blah, blah. And there was the whole thing. And it's so funny. I'm very easily entertained by this.
I love moments like that. Like, because like here in the States, you know, we were talking offline about like if they think you're Asian, they automatically assume we're Filipino because we don't code clearly as East Asian, let alone what East Asian country we come from. And but if I'm in the East Coast, I'm Dominican. I'm Puerto Rican. You're not going to convince the Dominicans or the Puerto Ricans that I'm not Dominican or Puerto Rican. And they will, especially Dominicans. Dominicans in particular are extremely passionate about me accepting my Dominican heritage. And it's like, it's even though it's like aggressive, it's done with in like such a loving pride type of way that like it always both overwhelms and makes me feel like at least somebody wants me shit, you know?
Honestly, yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing is going on. But now that I'm here in Mexico, so I'm used to being misidentified as Latine in some way. But here, it's only happened a couple times. Most of them realize I'm American from jump, which for me is just like, how dare you? But it's true. You know, like I can't help that it is also true. And so when I had to explain to someone who did come up to me thinking I was Mexican, who was speaking Spanish to me because I had two white people next to me. And I said, you know, like, lo siento, you know, no hablo español. And she was like, and she looked at me with this face of just utter shock and pain and disappointment. And I was like, yo soy negra y japonesa, and then she still looked at me like, I don't
know.
And I was like, yo soy americana, you know. And so, and she goes, oh, and then she goes, oh, and then she handed me a paper and then took the paper away. So like, she handed me the paper and was speaking Spanish to me, and then I did my whole lo siento, no español, da, da, da. And then when I said, so the gender thing I'm having to deal with is that I'm being corrected to use feminine pronoun, you know, feminine speak sometimes, and so I'm getting used to it, so I am using it, but at the same time it's my brain is doing weird things with the language, but it's fine, different topic.
I feel that.
It's happening. So like, you know, I'm Ella, like, you know, yo soy americana, and she goes, okay. So she snatches the paper away, she walks away, and then she looks back one more time, and then she keeps going. That was like the most overt, like, you should speak Spanish, you're clearly Spanish, you know, of some sort. And then, wait, black and Japanese, I don't care about that. Okay, okay, fine, you're American, smack. So I think it was probably still just like, you're still supposed to speak Spanish, you know, kind of a thing. Like, that was the vibes in that particular moment. And then in other moments when they speak Spanish and I say I don't, I do get a face of just like, why? And so now I just say, yo soy americana. And only one time did that cause confusion. So then I said, Estados Unidos, and they were like, okay. But I still think they think I'm...
They still think that you should be
some kind of Latin, right? So I should definitely speak. So that's why I feel compelled to say, like, I'm black and Japanese, hoping that that clarifies why Spanish isn't on the roster. But I mean, I just need to get like 2 years farther so that it can be like, I'm practicing my Spanish, and then they'll just accept me as a Mexican who grew up in America who didn't learn Spanish, and then they'll be fine with it. That's what I'm hoping to achieve. Some way. But yeah, like, when your face tells a different story than your, than the expectations of the person faith, you know, coming at you or whatever. I always think that people get excited, like, it's a mixed bag. Some people get excited that you don't look like you're supposed to in their eyes, but you speak, you know, like, some people really enjoy that. But I think, like, in the way that, like, American culture has taught us that we don't really get to access. So a good thing that I think both of you and I probably experience is the not feeling as comfortable in the monoracial Asian space of the category that we come from.
Yes. I feel so much more comfortable in, like, I guess I'll just say, like, pan-Asian spaces, because I can kind of just show up and everyone will be like, oh yeah, that's very
you're fine.
An Asian person, and we're all here together as Asians. Yeah. But like, if I'm with, like, if I'm amongst people that grew up in China, or like Chinese speakers that don't really speak English, there's a disconnect there.
There is, yeah.
But I, so
well, here's what I always say. Mm-hmm. I always say that we're not Asian in Asia. We're Chinese, we're Japanese, we're Korean, we're Filipino, we're you know, like, we're all of these other more specific categories. But here, it doesn't matter if we're Japanese, Chinese, Korean, you know, Vietnamese, it matters that we're coded as Asian. They can't tell us apart anyway. I think they can tell there are distinct differences, but they're just like, you're all Chinese, right? So, so like, here we have to grow up with it. We have to adopt an Asian identity versus necessarily a Chinese identity or a Japanese identity, whatever. And so, like, and, you know, like, Japanese in particular, they're assimilators. They drop language. They drop, for the most part, community. There's only small pockets throughout the U.S. that actually maintained some Japanese community and language and stuff like that, to the degree that, like, Chinese or Vietnamese or Laotian, like, they still stay usually
in definitely have their, like, communities. Like that,
where Japanese don't really do that. And so you, like, I just sit there and I show up in a Japanese place thinking I'm just going to be Japanese today. And they're just like, that's cute. Why do you think you're Japanese? You know, like, it's a whole different thing. So not feeling comfortable to, like, engage, like, desiring to engage, but not feeling comfortable to engage. I really started to find my Asian identity more recently in Blasian spaces and mixed Asian spaces. But I joined the Asian American Podcasters Association when I started doing the podcast. I got accepted. I would put forward, I'm like, just so you know, I'm mixed, you know, like, that kind of stuff. And they'd be like, shut up, just, you're Asian.
You're Asian, yeah.
And so
that acceptance that I was receiving in podcasting spaces led me to feel more confident to actually enter, like, you know, Pan-Asian spaces like you're describing, or more specifically recently Blasian spaces.
Yeah. And
that has done so much for me in terms of accepting the Asian identity that I really struggled trying to figure out what that was for me growing up. And I, you know, I hear it with you too. It's like, you're Chinese ass Brazilian American.
It's so funny too, because, okay, a couple of things. One, there was a very large migration of Japanese people to Brazil.
To Brazil, yeah.
Like when my mom
out there.
Moved there. Yes, y'all out there. And my mom would get read as Japanese when she was in Brazil.
Yeah.
And then, like, so I live in Flushing right now, which is like, it's basically Queens Chinatown. I'm more on the eastern side of Flushing, so it's kind of like, it's predominantly, I'm surrounded by like Chinese people and Korean people, and it's always that someone will start to speak to me in Chinese, or I'll also get Koreans trying to speak to me in Korean, especially if I go out and I'm wearing a mask and they cannot tell what kind of Asian I am. They just kind of assume like, okay, just are quite da 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 da, or like anhaseyo. I'm like, nope, I'm not Korean, sorry. Like,
yeah,
it's so funny to have to be like, lol, sorry for my face.
I know, sorry for my face. Literally, sorry for my face is something that I feel like is a vibe that Asians have, like Asian Americans have,
yeah,
or maybe like any Asian born in a Western society where you're just like, because people are always so stunned that you don't have an accent, that you know that you even speak English sometimes, and you're just like, but then on the flip of it, the Asians who expect you to maintain your Asianness, bro, what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm in a country that literally tells me to not do this, and I'm trying. Like,
always have their expectations from you, and it's so interesting too, because there's a very large, like, elderly Asian community here. And so I, for the most part, work outside, so I don't really wear my mask outside. And we'll sometimes have elderly Asian people come visit the garden and be like, we heard you were giving away free compost, but they don't really know, they don't speak English super well. And then I can sometimes, like, finagle a little bit of Mandarin and be like, no, blah, 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 this and that. You have to sign up here on this day. And it's always the elderly Asians that will kind of just look at my face, see that I'm speaking Mandarin and saying the words well, but not really piecing together coherent sentences. And then they'll just be like,
that poor child is
what's happening here?
Let's put a sentence together.
I'm trying to communicate with you and it's not working.
Oh no. I feel like you need to have like a little flip card deck on your neck that's just like, here's in Mandarin, here's in Cantonese, here's in Korean.
My workspace has signs in multiple languages that are like, we have a traditional Chinese like sign that's like, this is not soil, this is compost. We'll have one that's like in simplified Mandarin. We have one in Spanish. We have one in English because it's Queens. Like, you have to have multiple languages.
Yeah, you do, right? Posting. Also, like, Flushing has a pretty large Jewish population too. Is that how you ended up being Chinese and Jewish?
No. Wait. Flushing has a big Jewish population.
I mean, maybe not a huge Jewish okay. Let me correct, because I think I probably just said the most ignorant thing possible that I could have said.
No,
most of the New York Jews that I know come from Flushing.
That's so funny. Oh my God. Where are they? Oh, wait, actually, that makes sense. Wait, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, I just remembered that I walk past the Free Synagogue of Flushing.
Right.
And I go to work, and then I remember.
There is at least a community, if not the big one. I apologize for making it seem like I knew there was a huge population.
No,
7 Flushing Jews is what it is.
That is fascinating. Where are they? Can we meet up? Like, where are you guys at? Like... I don't leave my house very often. Like,
well, I mean, look, we were talking before, there is organizations like Lunar, the Asian and yeah. Jewish organization and stuff like that. I think it's so crazy because there is such a, this I don't think I'm being ignorant in saying, there is such a huge population of Asian Jewish mixed people in the U.S.
Yes, especially in the city. Like in New York.
Especially in New York and LA. New York and LA, yeah. Big time. That's where you're going to get a lot of mixed Asian Jewish people. So I think because Jewish people are so good at like maintaining community wherever they go, and depending on what kind of Asian you are, you might come from a Asian community that is so good at maintaining community. I think it's just a natural thing that there are a lot of, maybe not a lot, but there are opportunities for like Asian Jews specifically to find yes. like community. But Lunar is one of them. Shout out to Lunar. They've been on
the show. Yeah, big shout out to Lunar. And shout out to you for, I literally discovered Lunar through this podcast.
That's so good.
You know, it's so funny because I'm in the Lunar group chat with Alex Chester Iwata. And I also got to meet Rohan Jolie because we went to like a poetry reading in a bookstore in Manhattan, Chinatown. And I was like, what is happening?
The militantly awesome. Mixed world is collapsing. It's funny too, because I find like it took a few years, but it finally got to the point where like a lot of the mixed either content creators or like businesses or organizers, people that are like what I call professionally mixed, like we're out here, you know, publicly facing mixed people. We all are within a couple degrees of separation to each other. So like I've known people who have known Alex for years. There's no reason why Alex and I don't know each other better. And so this year when we finally connected to do an episode, like our whole pre-chat was, why aren't we friends already? Like we literally have so many yeah. people that know each other. And so so it kind of started with the LA mix. At first when I was living in LA, like all of us knew each other and stuff like that. And then now I'm in touch with a lot of the New York mix folks. And then now they all know each other. So in some way, shape or form, a lot of us know each other. So if you know me, you're going to know them. If you know them, you're going to eventually find out about me.
And yep.
that's just the way it works when you're like professionally mixed.
We're like, wait,
yeah. And we're straight up community. And this was so much better about like being in a mixed creator now versus when I started. When I started, there was no other mixed race podcasts that were active. There was no like real strong, like, let's actually try to find a general mixed community vibes. That was something that was important to me when I started it. And I would reach out to mixed folks that were doing stuff and they'd be like, no, you got to work on finding your own audience. And it's like, seriously.
I'm like, okay, rude.
The whole deal is that we are excluded from so many parts of ourselves. So I'm trying to build something for all of us that we can all generally feel comfortable in.
Yeah.
So it wasn't very collaborative in the beginning. My first collaborator was Natalie Evans from the Some Kind of Brown podcast. And she and I hooked onto each other because we're like, we're the only two that are willing to like make community. Yeah. And then from her, I met Asian Soph. And, you know, like, so every new meet ends up giving me more mixed people to connect with and da da da. But now, thankfully, most of us that are out here in the professionally mixed spaces, we're all within at least a couple degrees of separation. If we don't know each other yet, we're going to.
Yeah,
so it's pretty dope. Honestly, it's pretty dope. Yeah
I really do love that aspect of like living in the city now and being able to connect with more mixed folks, because like so for the early part of my life, so I was born in Manhattan, but I didn't really live in the city at all until now. I grew up in the LA area until I was 7, and I did have other mixed people around me. Like my best childhood friend was also a mixed white Asian, and we actually became friends because our moms knew each other and they connected that way. But then I grew up the majority of my life in a suburb of Atlanta. So I was like in the deep South growing up around predominantly white people for a lot of my like, what are the formative years?
Formative years. Yeah.
Yeah. So
were they, and they were just generally like generically white. They weren't specifically like Jewish, or you didn't really get to have like cultural. Not spicy way.
I was in like, I was out here in Trump country somehow alive under pressure.
Right. Yeah.
But like, I mean, I found my people eventually.
That's good.
You know, it was all the mixed queer Asians. We all just kind of found each other and we were like flocking together. And well, not all of us were people of color, but I think like one by one, each of us started coming out as some sort of queer.
Okay.
We would kind of just stick together because we were like, we're living in the heteronormative white supremacist
safety
now.
In numbers.
Safety in numbers for real. And I'm pretty sure my best friend and I, when we were growing up, people thought we were dating. We were not.
Oh, I have one of those too. My ride or die, like when people meet us together, they always like, so you stayed friends after you broke up? No.
We're never
together. We just have this weird like jealousy vibe thing that is like, oh, so you're hanging out with her, but literally it's just we're friends. Yeah. That's funny.
We were kind of aware that people thought we were dating, so we actually played things up a little bit.
Sometimes you got
we
to.
We were just like, again, yeah.
Safety.
safety. And I don't know, like, I've actually been thinking about this a lot, but there was some sort of safety in letting other people kind of assume we were dating because we both were read as, like, girls or femmes, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot more knowledge and acceptance around sapphic relationships and lesbian relationships, yes, more so than existing on like an asexual spectrum or the aromantic spectrum. Right. And like later on in our adult years, like after we graduated high school, I actually recently reconnected with said friend and we both were like, we're so aromantic. We are so asexual. What was going on there that we let people?
But it's safe, like that bond, like, oh,
safety.
Yeah, because the bond we were probably both, really like, saved you.
Brown Asian girls, like,
and it gave you room to just be, right? Like, yeah. I think having a friendship like that, because the same with my friend. This was a friend who I knew was gay before they knew they were gay, and I was just waiting out the clock because I wanted to date. but they weren't, and they kept dating these like soft femboys that were like that she could not respect, and I was like, you know, I kept trying to like in different ways be like, you're gay, be gay. But she wouldn't. And then by the time she finally came out to me, which, mind you, I took major offense to that she had the audacity to come out to me when I'd been telling her for years in different ways, you're gay. I wasn't explicit. I was just like, hinting. Yeah.
And then, like, no, you're gay. Yeah.
And then she comes to me and she's like, I got to tell you something. And da, 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 da. And I was like, you asshole, because now it's too late. Because neither, you know, like this, you're already with someone. I've moved on with my life. You're no longer in the I want to date you phase. But I've been telling you you're gay since we were teenagers. Why are you coming out to me? Like, I already know, dude. But yeah, but we're still friends. We're like 20 some odd years into our friendship, and it's still like that. But being together sometimes was the thing where like people wouldn't mess with us because they just left us alone, whether they presumed, yes, you know, there was something going on or whatever. It was just, there's just that safety and being able to kind of just freely be just weird little queer people that didn't have other weird little queer people to hang out with, you know?
Yeah, because also, like, this is messed up, absolutely, but when, like, lesbian relationships or sapphic relationships just get completely invisibilized, or people are like, oh, yeah, maybe they're dating, but maybe they're just best gal pals.
Maybe they're just best friends, yeah.
In that, too, so it's like, what? I don't know.
Because you're both irritated about that, but at the same time grateful that you can hide, yes, it if you want to. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It would be nice. But I think you probably got a lot of room to develop into, you know, even though you didn't have a name for what you might have been experiencing. Right. Like, I think it probably gave you room for that, for sure, to develop and get in there. I know this conversation went by fast. I know our first conversation went by fast, too. But yeah. I know you hinted at it, so let's get back into it a little bit. You mentioned, mm-hmm, your bagel
fusion dishes.
Can you talk a little bit more about what parts, what components of each of those things?
Okay. I'll start with the bagel because I keep watching Everything Everywhere all at once. My brain is just full of bagels. One of our compost piles is named Everything Bagel.
Nice.
Anyway, I was in a intense phase like during the pandemic where I started making bagels from scratch.
Nice. Just
because I was bored and I was on a streak of making like challah and like bagels, and I was like, I love making challah and bagels apparently.
And the ancestors were coming through. You didn't even know it.
The Jewish ancestors finally decided to show up and were like, we want bread.
We know you don't have a whole lot of access to our culture, so we're going to give you two distinct bread recipes.
Yeah, they were like, okay, our newest offspring didn't do a great job of passing their heritage to you, so now we have emerged. Here's how you make bagels. I mentioned that I grew up in the LA area, and I had that one friend that was also mixed white Asian as a kid, and his mom would always make tea eggs for us every time I came over there. So like tea eggs, basically just like eggs braised in like black tea, soy sauce, star anise, and other spices. And they're really, really tasty. And when you peel them, they have this like beautiful brown eggshell pattern on them. But I really liked having just eggs on bagels. I'm basic. I just like bagel sandwiches.
Comfort food is either really basic or really like this is the only thing we had in the house.
Yeah. And so my senior year of college, it was still pandemic times, and we were kind of holed up in our senior housing, and like we would just steal like at least 10 bagels at a time from the dining hall and bring them back. And all we would have in the kitchen was like, we apparently have 5 cartons of eggs in the fridge, so I guess we're making eggs. So I would be making like tea eggs all the time. And so it kind of came out of that where I just started like putting tea eggs on bagels instead of like fried eggs or scrambled eggs. So tea eggs on an everything bagel with cream cheese on it. That's my fusion food.
That's dope, though.
Singular contribution.
No, listen, I don't expect any of us to have just like a plethora of mixed, you know, fusion food in some way, shape, or form. But like in the way it, what seems to be the case is it always boils down to your two favorite comfort foods and finding a way for those things to join. There seems to be a lot of comfort in bagel and eggs, right?
So many eggs. It's insane how many eggs I go through.
But you found a way. Like, you found a way to use it, which I think is good, which I enjoy. I mean, I keep making a joke about a cookbook, but I'm getting really close to being like, no, yeah, that's actually the next book.
Because
I keep talking about it with people. Sometimes naturally it comes up. Sometimes I'm like, ooh, I don't have anything else to ask you, so let me ask you about this. But I'm never not like intrigued enough to be like, I would try that, you know, like even if it's not the kind of food I like to eat necessarily, I was like, but I would try, you know, I would try that. So I think we're getting close to 2024 is going to be the mixed, militantly mixed cookbook. Cause I want to try. I know we did kind of gloss over it a little bit, but like you didn't have as much access to your Jewish heritage as you did your Chinese heritage, and I guess also the British culture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Before we wrap all the way up, is there aspects of Jewishness besides challah bread and bagels that you're accessing or you've tried to access recently? Like, what's your awareness level even of your dad's
culture? It's more of an awareness for me. I think I find a lot more power in being a mixed Asian,
sure,
than say like a mixed Asian Jew,
sure.
Just because like the practice of Judaism stopped with my grandparents.
Okay.
They kind of just like left it and were like, we're just gonna assimilate and become white American.
Sure.
So when I was growing up, that's what it was like when I was interacting with the white side of my family. It was just like, I'm interacting with the American brand of whiteness that you see every single day, in which we watch the Super Bowl and there are football games playing in the background. And, you know, auntie this and uncle that will always say something casually racist and you're kind of just expected to deal with it. So I think more recently I've been finding more community in going to Lunar events. I attended my first Passover Seder, what was it, like 2 months ago, 1 month ago? Time doesn't mean much in my brain anymore. that was really lovely because they made so much effort to like make space for mixed Asian Jewishness or like Asian Jews that come from like so many different places, whether or not like we had access to our Jewish sides at all, whether we were like patrilineally Jewish, which is what I am in my case, or
So that's also a different level of access.
Yeah, or even like Asian adoptees who were adopted by Jewish folks and they like made space specifically like for like queer Asian Jews, which I really appreciated. But I found community, like I mentioned that I farmed for 7 months last year. One of my coworkers, it was Jewish, and like she grew up like very much so like having access, like full access to her culture. But she kept like, you know, putting together all of these like small celebrations with our whole farm crew of like Jewish holidays. So my first Rosh Hashanah that I ever celebrated was like with those people. And I made a circle challah for it, and it went really quickly. So I was proud of myself. That's about all I've got. I'm pretty like okay with how much access I have been able to get for my Jewish side now, because I've grown up being so used to just being a mixed Asian, but like identifying predominantly as an Asian person, because that's what I read as. My dad was a pretty like distant figure growing up. So I definitely felt the most like much closer to my mom growing up, and being able to have access to both like Chinese culture and Brazilian culture in a way, I think almost kind of like filled in the blank for me.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, it's fair that we like some of us just either, I think it's okay to both, like maybe not necessarily have access, but also like kind of not need and or want. I think that's fair. You know, I expressed to you, like I do technically have two white grandparents. Mm-hmm. One of them is Appalachian white. I don't know those people. I have five memories of my grandfather. Like I literally have five memories of him. And so it's not like I don't name it, but there's nothing actively craving, you know, back home in Appalachia, you know, like I'm not actively trying to figure out who those people are. I don't have the desire to, I don't feel like I'm missing anything. And my life is pretty full with my Black, my Japanese and my British humor stuff. Like humor is more where my connection to culture comes from. And it's like, it seems fine to me. I don't have to be angry or disappointed about it. It just is
what it is.
Yeah. It's just, it.
Yeah. It's just a fact of life. And that's it. I feel like we're always painted as like being so tragic. It's like, I know. Mixed people.
Nobody wants us.
I'm just here. I'm queer. I don't care. Like,
yeah it's fine. It's fine. That's why be your mixed ass self is be your mixed ass self. It literally means like in the cases in which it might be a little bit more tragic, I still think there's room for, given what you lack or given what you didn't have access to, whatever, you can feel however you want to feel about it. And if that means that you present differently than you behave, if that means that you have to learn the culture, like you have to go to events and practices and stuff like that, that's also you trying to be your mixed ass. Like, I really just think that we have to take away the burden. The burden of both knowing everything about all of our cultures and also not participating, you know, like, or choosing to, or not having access to, or being told you're not welcome. Like, that burden is not my burden anymore. My burden is
this is how I identify. This is the level of access I'm willing to create for myself. This is the level right. of access I have. And boom, you know, I'm just going to live. Like, this is just what it is. So I'm, I still think it's like, it's good for us as mixed people to talk about it. Like, this is how much access I had. So it's reflective in the way that I identify. You name it. You clearly name it. I think when naming it, you're also answering a question about like, okay, yes, you do look Asian, but what do I not understand about looking at you? Which I think is the thing that people.
But it's like, it's also recognizing that that's a projection from other people.
From other people.
Everyone, I think what's been so helpful for me is that other people will see whatever they want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And that applies for my gender and my sexuality too. If people are looking at me and my mixedness and my gender and my sexuality, they're going to see whatever they want to see. And that is not my problem.
Yeah.
That is that of you and what you're thinking about.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like, I don't control how other people perceive me. Mm-mm. That's it. I don't control how other people perceive me. So
this is one thing I'm so glad. I know offline we were talking a little bit about like the stress of like mixed talk, especially for me viewing the 18 to 23 year old mixed talkers in particular, where you're in that age category. And yet at the same time, like you have found your own path towards being comfortable with you and how you identify. And not to say that you don't have your times of invalidation or imposter syndrome or whatever I imagine you do. We're all humans.
Yeah.
But you're still walking around just like, here I am. Hello. You know, you put yourself forward for the podcast. You've submitted to the anthology. You're participating in Lunar. You're participating in comments with Militantly Mixed too. And you're just living your mixed ass life. And I'm so excited to get a chance to be able to, you know, share in those discussions with you, because I didn't get to have these conversations and just feel like this was fine. You know, like this is normal. Yeah. We just had a normal ass conversation about being normal people, but because the world is perceiving us as so different from them. So I appreciate you spending your time with me and having that conversation.
It's been an honor here.
I mean, we've been like, for people who don't know, like our icebreaker pre-conversation that is usually about 15 to 20 minutes that I have. We went to 45 minutes before we press record. And then it was constantly reminding myself, okay, let's stop. Don't say that. Let's actually start the podcast. But before we get out of here,
other things, I was like, I want to talk about this. I can talk about this. None of that.
We'll have more opportunities. You and I are connected now. We'll have more opportunities to talk. But before we get out of here, why don't you tell everybody what you love most about being mixed?
Okay. For me, it's being an agent of pure chaos.
I already
mentioned this so many times, but I cause so much confusion in so many different ways.
Hell yes.
And I think it's really fun, and I think it's funny, and I'm very easily entertained. Like, I feel like I would want to say, oh, the access to multiple cultures. And while for me, that is a part of it, but not so much with my ethnic mix.
Sure.
For me, it's the chaos. Like if my mixedness had a D&D alignment, it would be chaotic evil.
Hell yes.
You know what I mean?
As a fellow D&D nerd who is actually playing tonight and is working on leveling up my character, that makes me happy that you're approaching your mixed-ass life with the gumption of a chaotic evil.
Goblin. Like, I don't know what else to tell you.
I love it. That's great. Thank you for joining me again. This has been fun. You've been fun. You know you're fun. Shut up. Why don't you tell everybody how to find you on the Instagrams or whatever?
I'm on Instagram at @Echinacia_rights. So that's at @Echinacia_WRITES. Nice. Woo! Take that.
We got there. We did it. All right. Thank you again for joining me and for everybody
out
there.
Thank you for having me. This is so fun.
You were fun. Like, I had a blast today. I really appreciate you.
I did too.
For everybody else out there, don't forget, be your mixed ass self. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Militantly Mix is a Main Hustle Media podcast, produced and hosted by me, Charmaine Fury. Music is by David Bogan, the One. You can follow us on social media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Militantly Mixed. If you'd like to become a sponsor of Militantly Mixed, please go to patreon.com/militantlymixed for monthly sponsorship or paypal.me/militantlymixed for a one-time only donation. And if you like what you hear on Militantly Mixed, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to be your mixed-ass self. Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.